baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard Podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
It is a Monday morning mailbag on a Tuesday afternoon kind of day. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the walk-off. I'm Scott Belford, joined as always by the best co-host in the biz, Adam Mack. And we have all sorts of interaction from the last week to go over with you. Of course, feel free to drop your comments right here on YouTube whenever you're watching a video, and maybe we can get to you in the mailbag. If you'd like to reach out personally, you can do so by DMing us on Twitter at Walk Off Podcast, on Instagram, The Walk Off Podcast. And of course, the Discord is always going great guns. There's a link for that in the show notes. It's always free to join. 200 plus rabid Jays fans in there, always talking baseball of some kind, so feel free to join the Discord. Let's get into it, buddy, because I know we've got quite a bit of comments and questions to get to this week.
Before we do, I just want a quick shout out to anybody who celebrates Diwali, because as I was compiling my comments last night in my office, I saw nonstop fireworks from my window, so a lot of people celebrating Diwali, and a happy Diwali to all of you. So
look at that.
There we go.
You're all so right. Culturally plugged in, Adam.
I know. I'm as plugged in as it gets. That's what they used to call me back in college. Adam the plug.
Any cultural celebrations that Adam can see happening from his window, we will celebrate here.
Yes. Yes, you bet. Absolutely. If there is something I can see from my window and I don't have to get up, I will participate. All right. Let's get to it. Okay. First one comes in from Barney Johnson over on our Clips channel, which, by the way, if you are a subscriber of this main channel, we do have a Clips channel that is new where you can watch our same content in more bite-sized portions. So go subscribe over there. Help us out. I think we're at about 50 subscribers over there so far. So that's growing pretty quick. I'm pretty impressed with that. Barney commented on the Bo and Springer collision and just said, this is two players given 100%, knowing that this was an important third out. Crowd so loud, even if one called for the ball, which I doubt if either called for it, the other would not have heard the call. Hats off to both of them for the extra effort. So some nice positivity there from Barney.
Yeah.
Good way to start the show.
Good way to start.
This next one comes in from Dulcimerist, a bit of a long one, so bear with me here. Dulcimerist says, here's an odd thought for the hashtag mailbag. Might the Kirby Yates injury still be affecting the Jays? Yates was the intended closer for the 2021 season, but missed it all due to injury. Romano's role was as a setup man, but further bullpen injuries, Phelps and Merriweather, as well as meltdowns from Chatwood and Dolis, ended up giving Romano the closer role. Romano performed well and earned the role. However, this puts the front office in a position where they'd be reluctant to sign a premier closer and relegate Romano back to a setup man. And a premier closer wouldn't want to devalue himself by signing as a setup man. As a result, the bullpen gets filled with good but not great relievers.
So a lot to unpack there.
Mm-hmm.
Dolce really digging into the psychology of the game, if you will. Let's start with Kirby Yates. As most of us remember, Hawaii native. We were all very excited about his signing in the 2021 offseason. They got quite a bargain on him, signing him to $5 million for a one-year deal. He was kind of coming off of an injury and wanted to rebuild his value. He was a guy with closing experience, a track record, been there, done that. He seemed to fit in really well with the bullpen that they were building. And then, of course, didn't even get off the ground as he was injured for the year before the season even started.
Yep.
This did affect the 2021 bullpen, obviously, which struggled mightily at times during that season. And Jordan Romano was kind of thrust into the de facto closer role, which he took and he ran with. Now, where I have to disagree with the Ultramarist a little bit, or at least I would hope, is that this is not what's holding this front office back, is hurting Jordan Romano's feelings. I would beg and pray to the baseball gods that this is not the case. I don't know where you are at on that, Adam, but I think Jordan Romano has done an incredible job, and I know we've already talked about if we were to each get our wish on one free agent, who is that free agent? And I want Edwin Diaz. I want that big, bad closer with all of the past recognition of doing it, all the experience, some playoff acumen to their resume, I guess you will.
Edwin Diaz. I was watching on MLB.com. Edwin Diaz, the prognosticators over there on the MLB network, expected he would get 4 years. He is, I think, coming up on his age 30 season. Do you think the Jays would be well to do to go 5 years with Edwin Diaz, or is that too big of a contract for a closer?
It's too big of a contract for a closer, but yes. I
love it. Yeah.
This is it, man. This is the window. Like, my patience is done. This front office has laid out the timeline. They've stayed very close to that timeline where they were going to be playoff competitors in 2020 and 2021. Going to be World Series contenders in 2022, 2023. We're here. This is it. This is, if we're going to do it with this core, this is the time to push some chips in. I'm not saying let's go San Diego Padres on this thing, but it's spending some money on the bullpen. We've seen this organization for the last 2 years have struggles with the bullpen. And that be the Achilles heel a little bit. Let's not let it be again for a third time. Three strikes, yeah. You're out, right?
Yeah, in this offseason, a lot of big tuna in the free agent pool, which I think can work to the Blue Jays' advantage here. I don't think the Blue Jays are in on Aaron Judge. I don't think you think that either.
No.
I don't think the Blue Jays are in on Carlos Correa. I don't think you do either.
No.
A lot of people think that the market is going to stall out until those guys sign, right? And then once they do, the dam is open and it'll be a flood of signings, whatever analogy you want to follow with. There's a real opportunity for the Blue Jays to have that self-awareness that, like, hey, we are not in on the Aaron Judge sweepstakes, but we could be in on the Dansby Swanson sweepstakes and the Edwin Diaz sweepstakes, and go out and pursue those guys aggressively, offer big deals early before the high water mark is set for this free agent class.
Like, let's go back in history to Dulcimer's point, right? And obviously, being a team player is an individual thing. Not every person is a team player. But let's look at the 1992 and 1993 Toronto Blue Jays bullpens, where you had your seventh inning guy, Mike Timlin, who could have been a closer on almost any other team. You had Dwayne Ward, who literally was a closer just waiting to happen when Tom Hankey left in the 1993 offseason, between 92 and 93, I should say, right? They just bumped Ward up to the ninth and he didn't skip a beat. Yeah. So if Jordan Romano has an ego to him, which I don't feel like he does, then that's a problem. But I really do believe there's nobody who's going to be more happy about a guy like Edwin Diaz coming in than a Jordan Romano, because guess what? Flags fly forever, right? You think Mike Timlin sits around worrying about the fact that he wasn't a closer in 1992, 93 with those teams, or does he sit around and kiss his rings? You know, like, I don't know. It's a mentality, and I think that Jordan Romano is a guy who's a team player, and I don't think that it would psychologically damage anyone in this Blue Jays bullpen to bring in a ringer.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think even a ringer that would come in and sign for any sort of money isn't, I don't think, is going to have any sort of a, oh, I'm only going to be the setup man here hesitation.
Times have changed, right, man?
Like, he's going to get paid. Like, if he's an elite closer, even if he's going to be the setup man, he's going to get paid like an elite closer if we're bringing him here. Like,
yes,
Edwin Diaz, if we're bringing him in to be the setup man, let's just say, is still
going to get paid closer money.
The closer money. Like, that's not a bargaining chip that the Blue Jays are going to bring to the table and be like, well, we would give you $20 million a year, but you're only going to be our setup man. So how's $15 million a year sound?
Yeah.
Right? Like,
well, the game has changed too, right? Like, there's not defined roles in the bullpen like there was. It's so much more of a situational game than it ever used to be. And we've watched it happen all playoffs long, where the top relievers are coming out when the game is on the line. Whether that be the seventh or the ninth, it does not matter. When that top of the lineup rolls around and they need to face the big guys in the opposing team's lineup at the plate, who are they bringing in? They're bringing in their closer. They're bringing in their stud. And guess what? It makes a big difference if you bring Edwin Diaz in the seventh, and all of a sudden you still have Jordan Romano to bring in the ninth, right? Like, that is an elite bullpen, and that's what I want to see happen.
A couple comments here from the live chat before I move on. Lee Fougere, don't know if I'm saying that right, says, hey guys, huge fan, one simple question. If the Jays had flame-throwing, lights-out relievers, would they be in the World Series right now?
I don't know if it's that simple. You know, there's a lot of things to consider. I'm going to say no, although I do love this question, and this is something that I started trying to look up how many pitchers in the organization have hit triple digits. And I reached out to friend of the show, Brendan Delaney, to see if he already had a list made before I put in a bunch of work to try and figure it out. And the list is a lot smaller than I had thought. Yosfer Zulueta, TJ Brock, and Nate Pearson are the three guys who have hit 100 miles an hour. Hagen Danner and Jordan Romano are also on that list.
That's a short list.
Five guys. Listen, the Houston Astros had five dudes in their bullpen that hit triple digits. I'm not saying this is necessarily a downfall, but it definitely is something that I think that this front office needs to address. Having a little bit more velo isn't a bad thing. And I know Brennan brought up a really good point, because when I asked him for the list, he's like, I'm actually a big believer that velo is now becoming overrated. If you can't command it, it's useless. If you have no movement, it's useless. If you don't have good secondary pitch, it's useless, which is very true. He also brought up that Tiedemann's hitting 99, so he's right there.
Well, maybe when Tiedemann graduates high school, he'll find a little bit of extra strength. And a kid's pretty young to be throwing 99 my point there.
Just turned 20,
I will also add, and I don't think this is going to be a popular opinion, but I think it might be the truth. I don't care how good our bullpen was, I don't think we were getting past the Mariners the way this playoff series went. That game two was
a total collapse.
A total collapse that goes beyond just what happened to Mesa and just all of it. I don't really want to spend too much time on that, but game one, if we look at the box score here from game one, three runs in the first inning off Alek Manoah.
Three run home run.
He gave up another run in the fifth. It was 4-0 before we even got to this flame throwing elite bullpen to lock it down, lock down this 4-0 deficit. The bats did not help Manoah out. We did not. I mean, hats off to Luis Castillo, who pitched a gem. But a bullpen would have been, we weren't, I guess, game two, the bullpen contributed to the loss. But game one was lost, but like, and the bullpen had nothing to do with it. So, and game two was a crapshoot. It's just one of those weird, magical games that I don't think Mariano Rivera in his prime could have done anything about a collision in center field. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things. So,
now looking forward, obviously, Velo will help cover up mistakes. That is one thing that 100 miles an hour does, is that if you're not locating, sometimes it can make that irrelevant, that you're not hitting your spots.
There was another, I didn't include this in the mailbag, but there was a comment on, again, on our Clips channel, Scott, about Jordan Romano. Sorry to the commenter, I don't remember your name. But the idea was that Romano seems to throw too many sliders, as if he's using his slider as an off speed to set up the strikeout pitch with the fastball, right? But then he gets behind in counts and ends up throwing a meatball in hitters counts. And I believe it was Dulcimer's pointed out that Aroldis Chapman, same kind of pitcher, right? Difference being, Chapman throws 104. Hides a lot of those. Like, you can throw 104 anywhere. It's hard to hit, you know? And Romano barely touched 100 this year. Like, I know he did on occasions, but...
No, but he definitely threw it harder in 2021. That is for sure. His velo was down slightly when it came to his fastball this year. He still throws 98, 99. And he led the American League in saves. This is not about Romano.
One thing I will say, though, is that 100 is not 100 anymore when everybody throws 100. Mm-hmm. It's a lot less effective because you see it a lot more often. So there is more opportunities to have that at bat against it and try and calibrate your swing to the high speed pitch. Like, so 99, 98, I don't think is, I don't want to say difficult to hit. I'm sure it's freaking really hard to hit. Like, who am I kidding? Right. But
I get what you're saying. 95 5 years ago is now 98.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You know,
you see it enough.
50 is the new 30. Well, 99 is the new 94. Like, it's just, Everybody and their dog throws 99. Pretty sure Ryu can almost throw 99 if he really wants to.
I'm pretty sure he could not, but yes, I get what you're saying.
All right. Shall we move on from there then? That's a lot of time spent on the bullpen. All right. We got a few comments here that were roasting me for my take on 6-foot outfield walls. So J-Rag says 6 foot is too short. They should at least have to jump if they want to steal a home run. And then Mr. The Jess chimed in as well. 6 feet is too short. 8 foot walls would be better. Same practical effect. More dramatic, even for the easy catches. This now, is in reference to the Astros taking a leaping catch to take one away from Aaron Judge, which also has been pointed out to me that, like, they didn't catch it above the wall, so it would have been a double anyways. But we're really nitpicking here, guys. Like,
yeah,
the point that I was getting at, and these are obviously new to our channel, I've been on this since the idea of a new stadium, which turns into just be renovations for the Rogers Center. But that I was, like, sick of these 10, 12 outfield walls, or 10. What are they, 10 feet?
10 at the Rogers Center? Like
10, that, 11, 12 feet. Point is, nobody's robbing a home run at the Rogers Center ever. Right?
Yeah. And Kevin Pillar did it one time and made him an iconic hero. Like,
so, like, it's just one of the best plays in all of baseball. So, like, why would you not want to have that be possible is beyond belief. So, yes.
Adam has always advocated for shorter walls. He never put an actual measurement to it until we brought up 6 foot walls because of the Houston walls. I don't think that you actually were like, they gotta be 6 feet. You just meant, let's have some catches where you're leaping and stealing.
I think my original take was, yes, let's get the average height of an outfielder, let's put his arm up, and then let's have him jump, And then whatever that number is, you know, let's put the wall at the top of his, or the top of the wall at his elbow kind of thing, right? Like yeah. whatever, if that's 7 feet or 8.5 feet or whatever the case may be, but let's figure out that number. But 10, 12, some stadiums have 15 feet. Ridiculous. Ridiculous, Scott. All right, next one comes in from Scott Carter, who says, defensive metrics are sort of the Drake's equation of baseball. The idea is solid, but we don't have all the right factors to fit into it. You responded to this.
Mm-hmm.
And you said exactly.
I did.
But you misunderstood what the Drake equation was.
Yeah, I thought it was about the meme where he's in his puffy coat and he's like, and then the other time he's like, I did not think that. But yeah. Tell us what the Drake equation is, Adam.
I've got the meme pulled up here. But the Drake equation, again, I love comments that make me go research and learn stuff. The Drake equation is, I guess, astrophysics. It is the number of civilizations in the Milky Way galaxy in which communication might be possible. It is a long, complicated, here we go, let's pull it up. So it's a long, complex thing that you get the point of it. It is a speculation on how many other intelligent civilizations may be out there. There are like 7 factors that go into it. A lot of it is based on conjecture, which is the main criticism of it, which I think ties in nicely to the idea of defensive metrics in baseball, is that like we know what we want to measure, but we don't know really how heavily to weight each of those variables, like the range of a player versus, you know, the value of making a routine out that's not flashy, right? And it's just kind of,
the Milky Way has so much range. That's
so
the
much
problem
range
with this equation.
Exactly. Man, that was, you just blew my mind. Literally so much range on the Milky Way. Wow. Okay. That one set me back, Scott. Nicely done. All right. Next one comes in from Barry Hall. Says they need to get rid of the clown prince Vladdy. Fun is good, but they need to concentrate once in a while. For God's sake, don't trade Teoscar or Gurriel or Bo. But a shakeup is needed. Vladdy has good value just now. And could maybe get 2 good young pitchers for him. He's lost his way. Probably bored. He's had baseball shoved up his nose since he was a toddler. He has to go. Nothing less will turn it around. This is, and thank you for the comment, Barry, one of the worst takes I've seen in our comment section.
To the point I'm like, is that a Yankees fan? Is this a troll?
is this a troll? The comment almost contradicts itself at points. Like, Vladdy's having too much fun. He's got to go, but also he's bored.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those contradict each other, right?
You don't have fun when you're bored.
No. I remember being bored as a kid. Wasn't very fun. Also, the idea of, like, don't trade Teoscar or Gurriel or Bo, like, I'm going to extrapolate on this comment here and put words in Barry's mouth. We get these sort of comments all the time. And you see them everywhere. We don't just get these comments. They're everywhere. But it's like, don't get rid of this guy. Don't get rid of that guy. You guys can't get rid of Kirk. You guys can't get rid of Tiedemann. You can't get rid of any, like, but then the same people also comment, this team will never spend money in free agency. And those same people will also comment, this team needs to do something. But, like, what then? What then?
You can't scream from the rooftops. There needs to be a shakeup. But then also have a list of untouchables.
Unshakables. Well,
that's
don't
not
shake this.
How it works.
And the list basically is everybody.
But Vladdy. But trade Vladdy. Vladdy's the problem. Which is a new take. I haven't heard.
It is a new
that
take.
Vladdy is the sole take or the sole problem here, which is what Barry is alluding to, right? He's basically saying everything is fine. However,
except for Vladdy.
The clown prince Vladdy, which I don't know if I like that nickname, but there you go. He's got a nickname now. The Clown Prince is having too much fun and too bored for this team to be a winner.
Nothing more boring than a bunch of fun.
I've got to respectfully disagree. What is your thought, Adam, on too much fun? Is that a possibility? Because is Bryce Harper having too much fun right now?
And did he ever look like he was having fun when he eliminated the Padres?
Didn't he?
Okay, this is like, this is one that really is like a really divisive topic in mm-hmm. baseball and probably all of sports fandom. But the topic of like, we want our athletes to be serious versus let the kids play, right? Like, I don't know if this is an age thing or what, like where the divide is. It doesn't seem to follow any demographic that I can discern, but it is weird. And the Yankees, not known for their fun, eliminated. The Astros seem to be having a good time. World Series.
I think that there is more to this than we're making it seem like. Just like life, there's nothing that is black and white. There's nothing that is clear cut almost when it comes to anything. And this subject is the exact same. Listen, we were talking to Davis Schneider yesterday, and he is a AAA ball player with the Buffalo Bison. He's got some heat this last year, offensively has really improved, and is probably a guy who is going to push to make some appearances on the big league team next season, especially if there's any injuries, knock on wood, bad tacos go away. He brought up winning is fun. Yes. This was something that he, when we were kind of talking a little bit about Aaron Judge getting booed and kind of got into this subject a little bit. And his big takeaway was, you know what, at the end of the day, if you're winning, it sure is easy for all these other problems and all of these other obstacles that seem to be in the way to just dissolve into the background. I'm watching right now The Captain, right? The Derek Jeter documentary on Disney Plus.
Nice.
And there is something to be said about playing the game the right way. Running out every last time you put the bat on the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Paying attention throughout the game, not zoning out. Because that was one thing that really, you know, I knew this about Jeter. But, like, the focus on that dude was incredible. And it also reminded me a lot of Michael Jordan and the Last Dance documentary with how personal everything that was said he took. And that was Derek Jeter. Jeter had fun. They were a loose, fun group in New York, that dynasty team. But when it came down to it, it was all business. So I think there is a happy medium somewhere in between. And obviously you can have more fun in June than you can in October, because it's a more serious time to be playing baseball. You need to be more focused. It's not about having less fun. It's being more focused.
Yeah, I think part of the fun too is it does help get you through the grind, right? Gets you through those bad times too, right? Where like, you can't just be miserable, right? Like, being miserable benefits nobody.
And it affects your play, 100% it does.
If you've ever had a friend who's like a paramedic or a firefighter and, you know, someone who like has seen some shit, excuse my language, right?
Yeah.
They seem to usually have the darkest, most effed up sense of humor, the things that they find humor in, which I always enjoy. Right. But like, it's, I don't know if it's a coping mechanism or what, but like, you can't just go home and cry about all the horrific things you saw that day. Right. Got to be able to laugh and enjoy yourself. Like, it's this 162 games. It is a grind for sure. Here's an anecdote for you. My daughter playing hockey, they're at the time of the year where like evaluations are done. They have their teams, but now for the next month, they're playing a bunch of teams and then they're going to like redistribute the tiers, right? So it's like, there's some real one-sided games here, right? Like we just beat a team 14-2 and then last game we lost 7-3, but my daughter scored her first goal of the season. She comes out, I'm like, hey, like this is awesome. Congratulations. Good job. And she was just miserable. I was like, what's wrong? She's like, we lost 7-3, dad. And I was like, so proud of her. Cause I was like, oh man, we're going for Dairy Queen after that comment. So love it. Individual stats mean nothing, dad. We didn't get the W, dad. So
yeah,
not bad.
Listen, there is one thing to be said about putting the team first. It's the logo on the front of the jersey, not the name on the back. We've all heard that a million times. And that was one thing about this Jeter documentary that did stand out to me. Even when you go back to Vladdy screaming, this is my house. It just made me wonder if it would have been taken differently if he was screaming, it's our house.
Ooh. Interesting. That is interesting, Scott. Listen,
being a team player can be taught. This is something that you absolutely can instill in young players. I mean, I don't know where to go from here. This is on the front office to figure out. I don't think trading Vladdy is the move. I don't think that blowing things up is the move. But there is going to need to be some shakeups and some things need to be decided. And some bullpen arms need to be brought in. And there needs to be some accountability on this team.
We need a lot of shakeups this offseason. Let's leave it at that. More speculation to come, I'm sure. All right, next comment. We got a couple here, and this goes to the idea of grudges in baseball, team rivalries, how deeply those scars set into a guy's skin. So the first one, Michael Rotter says, let's be clear, Judge will never play for the Dodgers. Just listen to his own words. He grew up a Giants fan and hates the Dodgers. He may not play for San Fran, but he will never play for the Dodgers. And then the next one here that we'll get to after, from Andrew 42. Do you think the Dodgers would be bidders on Ross Stripling? And do you think he would even consider going back, or is that bridge burnt? Guys going Dodgers. Back to old teams that passed them over, that traded them away, that said, no thanks. And then a year or two later said, welcome back.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw it with Anthony Bass this year with the Blue Jays. You see it all the time. Scott, is Aaron Judge really going to let a childhood grudge stand in the way of his $400
money.
Million dollar contract
his
offer
money, money,
from the
money,
LA
money.
Dodgers?
Listen, Aaron Judge is going to take the highest bid. It's a bit of an ego thing. Just like Carlos Correa signed with the Twins, but had to do so at the highest AAV for a shortstop in baseball. Okay? Aaron Judge is the best right fielder in Major League Baseball. He has proven that this year. 62 home runs, breaking an AL record. The guy is, he's a Hall of Famer. If he can continue this pace for the next 10 years, obviously he was a little bit of a late bloomer, but he is incredible. And again, one of the best outfielders in all of baseball. The Dodgers are going to be in on him big time, and they've got huge money to spend. The Giants have big money to spend. He's a California kid. You're telling me that 13-year-old Aaron Judge is going to stand in the way of the Dodgers giving him $400 million over 8 years, making him the highest paid player in all of baseball and winning a World Series? Like, don't kid yourself. Look at the Dodgers. They are much closer to the promised land than the Yankees are. The Yankees have some serious retooling to do. I don't think the Yankees are in peril of rebuilding or anything insane like that because of the amount of money they have and how well they've done at building up their farm system. They've got some top prospects on the verge of breaking this lineup. In fact, part of the vitriol from Yankees fandom is that they didn't bring these guys up soon enough and they probably could have contributed in this run. I think the Yankees are going to be fine, but if you're Aaron Judge and you're just looking where you're at as a 30-year-old man at the top of his game, the Dodgers might be a pretty persuasive organization to need to try and turn down. And as for Ross Stripling, I mean, yeah, of course he'd consider going back to the Dodgers. If they're like, hey, Ross, do you want, how about 4 years, $60 million? You think Ross Stripling turns down 4 years, $60 million? No.
Yeah, no, of course not. Like, there's so many things with this. Like, for one, I'm going to start with a really obscure anecdote from my own life. Bear with me. I grew up in a very small town, 2,000 people, just outside of Kamloops, British Columbia. My minor league hockey team, my minor league baseball team that I always played on as a kid, we would play against Kamloops, and there was a rivalry there. Hated Kamloops. Never thought I would cheer for any team from Kamloops. Here I am, 20 years later as an adult living in Edmonton. Do you know which WHL team I look forward to the most coming to play the Edmonton Oil Kings? It's the Kamloops Blazers. That's my freaking team, man.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter. It just, some of these are like childhood grudges that are just like, that's it. It's a childhood grudge. For me, the fantasy that like rivalries mattered to professional athletes went away when Johnny Damon signed with the New York Yankees. Right? Yankees, Red Sox, heated, bitter rivalry, right? And then you have someone from the Red Sox going to the Yankees. Yeah. It's like, what are you doing? Like, no.
Cutting his hair, shaving his beard.
Yeah, like, what are you doing, Johnny? And he's like, yeah, you guys care about that stuff. We don't, right? Like, which as a teenager was really hard to hear.
Yes, it was.
But it's also true, right? And like Aaron Judge would make a lot of money. And this is the other point that I want to get to, is that like generational wealth, right, is something that is like a, most people don't get the chance at, right? So like, is it
to nobody?
Is a $300 million contract with the Yankees versus a $350 million contract with the Dodgers versus a $340 million contract with the Giants? It's all like more money than Aaron Judge will ever be able to spend, no matter how hard he tries. But like the idea of generational wealth, when you really get down to it, it's like, it's about more than just being loyal to your team or your fan base or whatever. Like, you do have to consider your kids and your grandkids, and every extra million you get, like, does go a little bit further 80 years from now. Right. And this is something that like we've never seen before.
Yeah.
Like the greats of years past never made oil tycoon money. You know what I mean?
Well, A-Rod would argue that. But yes, I do get what you're saying.
Okay. But we haven't seen his. Sorry. I'm thinking further back.
Yes. Sure.
Right.
Sure.
So like I mean, we haven't seen it to the point where like their kids
pre-2000. Yes.
We don't have a generation of like successful, wealthy grandkids of pro athletes who are like, yeah, my dad signed a, you know, $250 billion contract with the Yankees before the World War. So I'm like pretty set up for real estate and whatever,
the only thing we have is annoying children like Roger Maris Jr. talking about how Giancarlo Stanton is the home run king in the National League. Okay.
I digress. Point
so
being,
do I, buddy.
Man, we've really gone off the rails here. Anyways, I don't begrudge anybody. Like, I think there is a tendency to be like, oh, it's selfish to like really squeeze every dollar out of this contract. But like, it is.
But it absolutely
It's not his money that he's squeezing out. Like, it's his grandkids. Like, when you're talking about Ross Stripling and it's a $14 million contract versus a $12 million contract, right? Like,
yeah.
It is what it is, right? But like Aaron Judge, if he has a chance to get an absurd amount of money, most people will never get that chance. And this is something that is bigger than him. It is about his kids and generations beyond. So I hope he can get every dollar he's worth, and he's worth a lot. So congratulations to the one New York Yankee I don't really hate in this moment. All right, moving on. Speaking of New York Yankees, this next comment comes in from our Clips channel. So Dave Tyler said, best third baseman that the Blue Jays have ever had. This is in reference to the Matt Chapman Gold Glove nomination this year.
Yep.
And 20 Legend responded to that and said, no, he's not. Dude, dot, 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 which I thought really summed up the frustration nicely.
Big Kelly Gruber fan there.
Yeah, big Kelly Gruber fan. maybe he's a Josh Donaldson fan. That's what I was guessing.
Well, that's my guess.
Obvious choice for best. If you're not going to say Matt Chapman, you'd probably say Josh Donaldson. I would say Eric Hinsky.
Right. I would vote for Ed Sprague, but we all have our guys, right? There you go.
Let us know in the comments. Best Blue Jays third baseman of all time. All right, next one.
Love that comment, actually. And I love that the other guy responded to him like, are you an idiot?
Look, there's an argument to be made. Matt Chapman, best third baseman Blue Jays have ever had.
100% there's an argument.
Defensively elite. Although, again, back to the defensive metrics are kind of weird. Yeah. With the Gold Glove nominations coming out, Luis Arraez, Jose Ramirez, and Matt Chapman, all finalists for the Gold Glove at third base. Josh Donaldson, not. According to defensive runs saved, he is better than all three of those players combined. It's like 8 versus like 2, 2, and 3 or something like this was what I saw. So defensive metrics are weird, is my point.
Yeah, DRS.
Interesting. Josh Donaldson might have been the best defensive third baseman this year, for all I know. He was not better than all of them combined. That is ridiculous.
Well, certainly was not, yes. Well, we talked about this on Friday, right? There is something to be said about the eye test. I know that analytic folks hate it. The guys in the khakis can't stand to hear about the eye test, but there is something to be said for managers and coaches voting on who they feel is the best defensive player and what they need to do to avoid that defensive prowess when bringing guys to the plate.
All right, next one comes from our Discord. Scott, do you want to take this one?
Yeah, absolutely. This one kind of stood out to me. This was a whole thread, so we'll get into it. And it was original Blunt Smokin' in Discord. Of course, he's got the two dots over the U. You know those little, like Blunt Smokin'? Blunt Smokin'?
Yes.
But he posted Arizona Fall League updates. The current OPS leader in the entire AFL is a Blue Jays prospect, but it might not be the person you are thinking of. Zach Britton, our fifth round pick from 2020 draft, is currently slashing a batting average of .500, on base percentage of .553, slug of .750, and a massive OPS of 1303. He's a lefty bat, has primarily played the corner outfield positions in the Arizona Fall League. Scott Adams, the Jays fan, then said, was he primarily a first baseman in the Jays system, or am I thinking of someone else? Scott Adams is thinking of Spencer Horwitz, is my guess. Lefty bat, friend of the show. Original Blunt Smokin' responds with, he was actually a catcher for most of the season. He split his time between Vancouver and New Hampshire. Our catching depth is pretty deep, so I like that he's getting reps in the outfield. That was likely something they wanted him to work on. SCTI then gets involved. He goes, his first Bowman, because SCTI is a card collector, he goes, his first Bowman from 2020 has him listed as an outfielder. Then Original Blunt Smokin' posted a tweet from the Arizona Fall League with some video, and it's Zach Britton hitting a homer, and it says Blue Jays prospect Zach Britton, who is Rule 5 eligible next offseason, launched his first home run in the Arizona Fall League, 101 miles an hour off the bat, 397 feet. Scott Adams, the Jays fan, then said sweet and posted our interview with Zach Britton, which, of course, when we talked to him last offseason, he was an outfielder, drafted as a catcher, but he was going through some groin injuries and they were lingering. And so he just stopped catching. They moved him into the outfield. And then he went back to catcher this season now that he's completely healed. And it was kind of funny because if you go to Zach Britton's Twitter account, the posted tweet he has is the minor league post or something like that. It's some minor league Twitter account that follows offensive numbers. And basically it was like Zach Britton with a huge outfield prospect for the Jays. Zach Britton, huge game, home run, a double, and two singles. And he quote tweeted it and just put, I'm a catcher.
Love it.
Yeah. So anyways, that was more or less just an example of what our Discord is all about. And people are always having little threads like that. It's a fun place to be. There is a link in the show notes for that. Zach Britton is friend of the show. Maybe we'll have him back in the offseason, see how he's doing. Lefty bat, great kid. And you can check out his interview. In fact, maybe if we can remember, we'll even throw that in the show notes there. Just a heads up, too. We do wind up talking to a ton of people in this Blue Jays organization, whether it is within the mental health performance or the mental performance department, whether it's in the high performance department, whether it's one of the players in the affiliate. So definitely, if you haven't gone through some of our full conversations in our pull down menu in YouTube, check it out, because we have talked to some people we have no business talking baseball with that we're hitting way above our weight class. And I know that we even have a couple of really interesting prospects joining us this week. We sat down with Davis Schneider of the Buffalo Bison yesterday. That is going to be released later in the week. TJ Brock sat down with us just last week. TJ Brock is a pitcher with the Vancouver Canadiens, one of the very few pitchers in this system that consistently throws 100 miles an hour, and the dude loves to strike guys out. You definitely want to check that out. And then we talked to Jimmy Robbins, starting pitcher for the New Hampshire Fisher Cats, tomorrow. So again, lots of minor league stuff to get to. There you go. There's my spiel, Adam.
There you go. Well done. We do have two more comments to get to here. But before we do, I just want to check in with the YouTube live chat. Mustard Tiger says, did we ever get an answer on whether or not Dulcimerist plays a Dulcimer? And we did get an answer. He does. So there you go. 20 Legend says Troy Gloss and Scott Rolen are also better than Matt Chapman.
Hey,
I don't know, Troy Gloss. That is a,
I forgot about Troy Gloss too.
That is a deep reference. He hit 38 home runs for the Blue Jays in 2006.
So, right. And then they moved him straight across for Scott Rolen's, right?
Yeah. So
yeah,
good catch there. I wonder if Troy Gloss would come on the podcast.
That's
a name worth writing down, right?
Yeah.
We can get Shea Hillenbrand and Sean Green and
Troy
Gloss to the list.
All right.
Lawn Care Made Easy says Josh Donaldson MVP makes him the best Jays third baseman. Yeah. The hardware is tough to argue with.
Not a lot of MVPs in Blue Jays history. One.
Before we get back to the comments here, if you are watching, and we have about 20 of you watching in the live chat right now, do me a favor and drop a like button, because believe it or not, it really does help the algorithm. YouTube looks at how many likes and interactions we had during the live stream, and that is what a decision it makes for how many people to put it out to. So if you could, that would be much appreciated for dropping a like on this. All right. Two more to get to, and then we're out of here. So this one comes in from Twitter. Tom Henke Glasses DM'd us and said, "Boys, I always forget which one of you runs Twitter." That is Scott, by the way.
Yes.
"Either way, damn, tonight's game was magic." In brackets, Yankees Astros game four. "Yankees fans are in shambles. Do you guys think the Yankees are in as bad of shape as their fans are acting like?"
So to start with, it was a magical time to watch the complete and total unraveling of a fan base like happened on that game four loss to Houston, right? The Yankees went up 2-0 only to lose that lead. Then they went up 5-4 only to lose that lead. If you're a Yankees fan, that was an incredibly heartbreaking and tough game to watch. Are the Yankees in as bad a shape as their fan base is letting them on to be? I think when it comes to the New York Yankees, the best thing you can do for their fan base and their media that follows the team is whatever they have put the temperature at, just turn it down a couple notches, and that's probably more realistic. So right now, they're running around screaming the house is on fire. Yes, there's a smoking pot on the burner. You like this analogy here?
I love where you're going with this.
But no, I don't think the whole house is on fire. However, Aaron Judge leaving would be absolutely devastating to this team. They are an aging core. They do have some major problems at shortstop. They do have some question marks in the starting rotation, as deep as they seemed in that starting rotation at the beginning of the season when they were on pace to break a major league record for wins in a regular season. But it's funny how starting pitching goes, man. You know, like, they went out, it looked like they won the trade deadline, right? Getting Frankie Montas. Didn't even make a playoff start. Now, could Frankie Montas turn things around for them in 2023? Absolutely. He's got a track record. He played great in Oakland. However, some things to keep in mind, or a very pitcher-friendly ballpark in Oakland. Definitely a shittier division, pardon my language, when you're looking at the AL West in comparison to the AL East. Yeah, the Yankees are, they're probably the most beatable and in the most vulnerable spot that they have been in for years, which only bodes well for the Toronto Blue Jays, the Baltimore Orioles, the Boston Red Sox, the Tampa Bay Rays. This could be, we could be, I don't think that the Yankees will ever rebuild. They've got the money to avoid those hardships. That's the word. Hardships. They've got the money to avoid those hardships. However, you do look at this team and there are some big time question marks and some holes to fill, and we'll need to just wait and see what happens with Aaron Judge, because it definitely becomes that smoking pot definitely becomes a grease fire in the kitchen if Aaron Judge winds up signing elsewhere.
Also, sounds like Anthony Rizzo considering the opt out. So
he had an incredible season and he's a big lefty bat. Why wouldn't you?
33 years old, looking. He's got 1 year left on his deal as it stands, but does have the opt-out, so he has until 5 days after the World Series to make a decision on that. If Judge is gone, Rizzo's gone, that's...
Yeah.
New York is a mess, potentially. A lot of holes. That AL East is only getting better. They have a lot of stuff to do this offseason. A lot of stuff to do.
Now, that said, perspective is something to keep here. AL East, division champ. ALCS, appearance in 2022. These are not total failures. But this Yankees team just wasn't good enough to beat the Astros. Like, bottom line, you can make all sorts of excuses. I watched every single one of those games. The Houston Astros dismantled the New York Yankees methodically. It was not that game four. Like, I won some big time money on that game because I bet on the Astros during live betting. I bet on the Astros when they were down 2-0, and then I bet on them again when they were down 5-4.
Oh, nice.
And wound up like winning $150.
Beauty.
It just never felt like the Astros were going to lose that game, in my opinion. They just kept coming. Methodical is the best word I can think of to describe that Astros team.
Here's a question for you. And we'll end on this before we move on to our last question of the day. Yankees. Good, not great?
Yeah.
I think that's... Yeah. That's where I land on them too. Good, not great, haven't been great in over 10 years. Still think they're great, and I think that might be part of their problem, is a lot of them still feel like they're living in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. Great time for them to live.
Great time for them to live, yep. All right, last question here. Listener reached out from the audio side. This is from Jay Coop. Said, hey, the manager of the Jays, John Schneider, was he in any way on track to be a big league manager, or did this just happen to be right place at the right time, filling a hole and little finger his way into the throne with Montoyo getting canned? Great analogy there, Jay Coop. Great analogy.
I love that comment so much. Like, what is the Venn diagram of walk-off fans, Blue Jays fans, and Game of Thrones fans? We just found it right there. Right?
That's the sweet spot.
I do love that reference. So a few things. Number one, I don't know if John Schneider was on track to be a big league manager in other organization, but I think there's a little bit of truth to both sides of this, that he was ready to be a manager. And on top of that, he did little finger his way into this position. And this kind of blew me away when the Blue Jays announced that he was coming out, and they put out a stat list of John Schneider's accomplishments with the Blue Jays. I think, Adam, you're throwing that up on the screen.
I've got
right
it
now.
Here.
But we'll go through it here. And this is some stuff I didn't even know, right? John Schneider was selected by the Blue Jays in round 13 of the 2002 MLB draft. John Schneider has been a member of this organization for 20 years, two decades, guys. That's incredible, right? Retired in 2007. After 311 games in the Blue Jays minor league system. In 2009, he became manager of the Rookie Ball Gulf Coast Blue Jays. In 2010, he became youngest manager in Vancouver Canadiens history. 30 years old. John Schneider has been a manager for 13 years, and he's only 43 years old. That's incredible. In 2017, he managed Dunedin Blue Jays to their first championship in team history, which got him a promotion to Double-A with New Hampshire. He then led the Eastern League to the championship title. He also won Manager of the Year that year, promoted to the big leagues as a coach in 2019, and we all know what happened mid-season. So, yeah, I guess he did little finger his way into this a bit. But love to see it, and well-deserved.
Very cool. I didn't know about this, or I didn't know this about John Schneider. Played catcher, which just makes too much sense, too.
Yes, exactly. So much
catchers
sense.
Make the best managers, right?
Was John Schneider the right move? Only time will tell, my friends. That will be decided in the next year or two.
This is true. All right, let's wrap it up here. We're approaching the one-hour mark. Scott, thank you so much for another great mailbag episode.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you so much, everybody who has followed along live. We always appreciate it. Of course, if you have watched this deep into the mailbag and have yet to subscribe or hit like, we would appreciate it. It always helps. If you're on the audio side, a big tip of the hat your way. Sometimes we don't show the love to the audio side we should, but we do truly appreciate you. Of course, if you are listening on the audio side and have not subscribed, please do so. Discord, always free. Always conversations worth being involved in when it comes to the Blue Jays and baseball going on in there. And it's kind of self-contained. Adam and I are in there, but it's its own animal. So that's free. Link is in the show notes. At Walk Off Podcast on Twitter, The Walk Off Podcast on Instagram. Take care, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Osborne with a drive. Cheese and crackers. Shows to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.